Is TikTok on the clock? The future of forensics in America? And is AI eliminating jobs at IBM? Welcome back to the Weekly Money Clip. In a market with millions of podcasts, it is tough to stay on top of the essential business and tech stories beyond headlines. This week, we will be counting down five key moments from last week to give you context for the week ahead. As always, clips are under 5 minutes, from voices you trust, adding context to headlines from the week behind to prepare you for the week ahead. Before we jump in, let's review the week's top headlines. This week in the world of finance, business, and technology, we witnessed a series of impactful events that speak volumes about the current state and the trajectory of our global economy. At Freddie Mac, a significant leadership transition unfolded as Michael Hutchins was appointed interim CEO, signaling a new chapter for the mortgage giant amid evolving market conditions. Boeing faced further headwinds as Fitch Ratings adjusted its outlook to stable from positive, spotlighting challenges in the aerospace sector, particularly around the 737 MAX deliveries. Meanwhile, in the energy sector, Italy's Saras reported a stark decline in its core profit for 2023, just as it stands on the brink of a takeover by Vitol, reflecting the turbulent waters of the global oil market. The stock market had a difficult week, with indices like the S&P 500, Dow 30, and NASDAQ all marking declines, hinting at the broader sentiments of caution and reevaluation among investors. In a twist of positivity, Rivian stock rose, a sign of investor confidence in the electric vehicle market, despite the company's ongoing challenges with cash burn. Amid these business maneuvers and market shifts, the consumer world was greeted with a sign of hope for those seeking to escape the grind. Spring travel has surged to an all-time high, with volumes eclipsing last year's records. Those were the key headlines. Now let's dive into the stories behind the headlines. This week, we welcome Scott Stantis, Ilya Shapiro, Sarah Rumpf, Simpson Garfinkel, and Jake Novak.
At number 5 in our countdown, we begin with Scott Stantis reviewing a strong jobs numbers report and the fallout. Scott is an internationally syndicated editorial cartoonist, senior fellow at the Alabama Policy Institute, and co-host of DMZ America podcast. Here he discusses the recent increase in inflation pushing up by a few tenths of percentage points. Scott expresses concerns about the Federal Reserve raising interest rates, which could negatively affect the economy. Stantis highlights how housing costs are a major factor contributing to the rise in inflation, with current numbers showing nearly 60% of income going towards housing. He suggests liberalizing zoning to build more property inventory, focusing on constructing apartment buildings and condominiums in central urban areas. He emphasizes the need for long-term solutions to address the housing crisis, offering insights on how to accommodate the growing population while conserving the environment and enhancing city life. Let's join Scott now for his entire analysis.
Hi, I'm editorial cartoonist Scott Stantis coming to you from Money Clip. Well, new inflation numbers have come out, and inflation has indeed ticked up a couple of tenths of percentage points. And let's hope this doesn't make the Federal Reserve go berserk and raise interest rates or even threaten to raise interest rates, because that really would put the kibosh on an economy that's looking healthier and healthier. But what I want to talk to you about today is housing. Housing costs are one of the contributing factors to the uptick in inflation. And let me tell you a little story. Back when I was young, and that was a very long time ago, the average or the common knowledge or common thinking on how much housing should cost is roughly 1 week of your income. That is somewhere in the neighborhood of 22, 24, 25% of your income. That number has changed so dramatically that the most recent numbers show that nearly 60% or over of income is now going towards housing. That obviously means far less money to spend on consumer goods, on gas, on clothing, you know, just how can we correct this problem? And yes, it's a problem. And the obvious answer for me is to look at market solutions. What's the market solution? The number one factor driving this ridiculous uptick in the cost of housing and the cost of houses and the cost of rents is the lack of inventory. So let's begin with liberalizing some zoning and let's start building inventory. My suggestion, my hope, is that they go vertical. That is, apartments and condominiums in centrally located areas of cities. Because what happens is, if you go horizontal, obviously you eat up natural resources and you destroy the things that make living in those communities worth living. So, long-term effect, this is something that's not going to happen overnight, obviously. And if it does happen overnight, don't live in those buildings because they're dangerous. So, but if we look down the road, if we actually approach this issue as statesmen should approach an issue, look at the long term. You're having a population growth that's significantly stalled because a number of people are not having children, but we are having an influx of immigrants. What is the best way to house these people, and what opportunities do we have to house them? Build high rises in central locations, building the central cities, reinvigorating the central cities, makes all the sense in the world. For Money Clip, I'm Scott Stannis.
We now continue the countdown with number four. We join Ilya Shapiro. Ilya is the Director of Constitutional Studies at the Manhattan Institute and author of Supreme Disorder and Shapiro's Gavel on Substack. In this segment, he tackles the TikTok ban discussion, noting both the Heritage Foundation and the Uniparty are siding with China's Select Committee Against Trump and the Cato Institute in opposition to the ban on TikTok. Shapiro clarifies the bill does not ban TikTok outright, but prohibits ownership by hostile foreign states. Concerns stem from Communist China's potential to manipulate algorithms and gather data. While the bill is not foolproof, it aims to safeguard America from foreign influence. He specifically highlights ownership by entities other than the Chinese government would not pose a problem. The debate now centers on national security over First Amendment rights. Here is Ilya's entire audio op-ed.
Well, the topic of the day is the bill to ban, but not quite ban, about that in a moment, TikTok. And there are some odd coalitions on this. I saw this tweeted out. It's Heritage and the quote-unquote Uniparty. I guess that means most of both political parties, or at least all unanimous, the China Select Committee, against Trump and the Cato Institute, who are against banning TikTok. So here's the deal. I've read the bill. Make sure you read the bill. It's important. What it does, it doesn't ban TikTok. It bans ownership by a hostile foreign state of TikTok and other information sources as defined in the statute. Again, I refer to the statute for the actual text. If ByteDance, the Chinese parent company, divested itself of TikTok tomorrow, then it's perfectly fine. That's why this is not a First Amendment issue. This is a national security issue. Just like CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States has blocked various sensitive investments by foreign governments. Just like the Federal Communications Commission limits the percentage of foreign ownership in key communications networks. This is a concern about the Chinese, the communist Chinese, influencing hearts and minds through all sorts of algorithmic manipulation, data gathering about Americans, sowing confusion, et cetera, et cetera. I myself do not use TikTok. My kids are not old enough to use it, but I have read enough to understand how it sows chaos and weakens America psychologically using sophisticated tools. So it is not in America's interest to have it owned by the Red Chinese. And this bill would prevent that. Now, there are ways to get around it. It's like an 80% solution, not a 100% solution. If you go to Canada and download the app, if you use a VPN, you know, into Mexico or something, yeah, there are ways to get around it. But this would solve most uses and would effectively prevent the Red Chinese from destroying America in this way, with this information psychological operation. Legally speaking, it's not a First Amendment issue. Like I said, if this was not a Chinese company, if this was spun off and Jeff Yass, who's a friend and has supported lots of things that I've done, who's a big investor, owned it, which I would love for him to do rather than the Chinese, that would be great. Or, you know, somebody else. It wouldn't be Meta, by the way. Trump's concern is that Facebook would take it over. I think American antitrust authorities would not allow that. But in any event, the issue is not the speech or that it's platform, the tech platform, social media, what have you, is that it's owned by the communist Chinese. There are other legal objections that have been raised, but they don't hold a candle to it. The debate has become First Amendment versus national security. And look, I understand Jeff Yass doesn't want to lose his stake, so he should divest or sell or what have you. But point is, the Chinese would make an awful lot of money if they sold their stake in TikTok, but they don't want to because they realize this is a way to damage America, proving again that this is a national security issue. Mike Gallagher's bill for the Select Committee on China would be a good thing.
Welcome back to number three in our weekly countdown with Back with Sarah Rumpf offering another take on the TikTok ban. Sarah Rumpf is the contributing editor at Mediaite. In this clip, she points out, while it's important to address what TikTok takes from users, we need to also focus on what it offers. Studies show the content we consume impacts our cognitive development. Chinese TikTok emphasizes educational content, unlike the American version, which promotes harmful challenges and trends. With American children spending significant time on the app, it's crucial to be proactive in curating the content we view to protect our mental health. Here's the rest of the piece from Sarah.
Hey, y'all. This is Sarah Rumpf, contributing editor at Mediaite, talking about TikTok. Congress is debating a bill that would force the parent company ByteDance to sell it so that it would no longer be controlled by the Chinese government. And a big part of the debate has been talking about security and the data that this app is collecting on all of us and, you know, whether that's really secure. And those are valid concerns for sure. But, you know, we've all been giving so much data between our smartphones and Facebook and Google and Amazon over the years that there's a point where the horse is way, way, way out of the barn at this point. But I'd like to talk about not what TikTok is taking from its users, but what it's giving to its users, because I think that's being overshadowed in the debate. There are a lot of studies out there showing that, you know, you are what you eat when it comes to your brain as well. The content that you feed your brain affects you in a lot of different ways. And that can be in a positive sense, like all the studies showing that parents that read to their kids and encourage them to love reading, that results in higher IQ scores and test scores down the road. And at the same time, young kids that are exposed to violence and trauma, whether that's in real life or in the entertainment they consume, that can have bad effects. We've got, you know, all the studies showing teenagers especially susceptible to depression and anxiety from the social media that they're consuming, that, you know, the effects of Instagram videos in inducing eating disorders with teenage girls especially. It's important to note that the version of TikTok that ByteDance runs in China for the people of China is totally different than the one in America. The Chinese version has strict limits for how long a child can use it, only 40 minutes a day. There's a pause between videos to disincentivize the mindless sort of scrolling addictive behavior. And the content itself is totally different. It's heavily curated, and what is being promoted to children is educational videos, fun science experiments you can do at home, lessons about nature, lessons about history and geography. What we are getting here in America is horrifically bad pranks and things that are unhealthy and dangerous, and these stupid TikTok challenges and trends that you see pop up in your newsfeed every now and then, that somebody ended up hospitalized or worse, killed because of some terrible thing that they tried. The content that TikTok is serving to Americans is meant to make us dumber and more addicted to it. It's meant to be a sensory overload. And, you know, right now, I think that the latest figure I saw is that kids that have the app are using it or on it for an hour or two a day. And you think about how much that adds up. That's time that they're not working on their homework or out playing with their friends or talking with their families and other things that are good for you. There was a tech expert that was on 60 Minutes last year. If you Google it, 60 Minutes TikTok episode, he compared the Chinese version of TikTok to spinach and the American version to opium. It is in China's interest if Americans are less educated and less effective and are more emotionally distraught and have more mental health challenges. This app is encouraging very detrimental and divisive feelings and behaviors. I'm not quite sure if this would be successful with TikTok, but I did want to end on a positive note. I obviously have to read a lot of political content for work, but my Instagram feed, despite what I'm accessing elsewhere on the internet, my Instagram feed is baking videos and nature videos and silly, quirky comics and the actual friends and family in my life, because that's what I have deliberately clicked on over the years. That's what I've told the algorithms I want. So think about what you're consuming and let's be careful about what we're feeding our brains.
At number two this week, we address the comeback of analog computing. Simpson Garfinkel is a science journalist who has published hundreds of articles in newspapers and magazines and 17 books. Research interests broadly include data science ethics, digital forensics, personal information management, counterintelligence, and counterterrorism. He is currently chief scientist, Basis Tech LLC. Here, Simpson highlights a recent NIST report outlining visions and priorities for forensic science in the U.S. The report discusses a symposium where experts presented updates in wet lab and digital forensics with a focus on AI's impact. Garfinkel predicts AI will automate tasks currently done by examiners, leading to robotic labs and get evidence buttons in digital forensics. Garfinkel believes the report is a valuable resource for those interested in the future of forensic analysis. His insights shed light on the evolving landscape of forensics, offering a glimpse into the likely future of the field. Let's join Simpson for his entire op-ed.
Hi, this is Simpson Garfinkel for CenterClip, talking about technology. And I wanted to draw people's attention to a report that just came out from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And it's a report of a meeting at NIST that I participated in. The report is about visions and strategic priorities for forensic science in the United States. NIST had this two-day-long symposium where lots of experts came in and talked about what's happening in forensics, both wet lab forensics and digital forensics, my area. I gave a presentation about how artificial intelligence is going to be impacting digital forensics and forensics in general. And one of the points that I kept making was that most things that are being done now by forensics examiners are increasingly going to be done by artificial intelligence. And this includes both finding data to analyze and doing the data and writing the reports. And especially we're beginning to see robot labs happen and forensics labs in a box. And in the world of digital forensics, my goal is to create what I call a get evidence button, where just the entire analysis, where as much as possible, is done automatically. So the report is NIST Special Publication 2100-06, Long-Term Vision and Strategic Priorities for Forensic Science in the United States. It's a fun report, in as much as any of these reports are fun. If you care about what's happening with the analysis of fingerprints or bullet holes or the analysis of computers that we pick up during drug raids, it's a report worth looking at, a vision of what is happening today and what's going to be happening in the future. Simpson Garfinkel for CenterClip.
To round out our countdown this week, Jake Novak joins the Money Clip to discuss IBM and jobs being lost to AI. He thinks this is an overlooked story. Novak thinks a mean headline needs to be the significant layoffs announcement at IBM. As a major leader in the tech and consulting sectors, IBM declared substantial cuts in their communications and marketing divisions due to advancements in artificial intelligence. This move reflects IBM's plan to replace a substantial portion of their workforce with AI technology. Jake states this decision sets a precedent for other companies to follow suit in cutting staff and utilizing AI, impacting job opportunities in America. Meanwhile, shareholders in companies like Nvidia, heavily involved in AI manufacturing, stand to profit. The IBM layoffs highlight a transformative shift in business operations, mirroring the potential impact of the AI revolution. Let's join Jake Novak now.
Hi, I'm Jake Novak, and you're going to see a lot of political and war stories as your top stories in the news today and in the days that follow, but I really think your number one story today should be the major announcement of layoffs at IBM, which is definitely the result of AI. IBM, of course, still a major corporation. Maybe you don't think it's the top corporation that it used to be as far as being one of the top five corporate names in America, but of course it is still a major, major leader in not only tech, but in consulting in America. And they announced this morning major cuts in their communications and marketing divisions. And that comes on the heels of not that long ago, IBM saying it's going to be aggressively looking to use AI to replace a lot of workers at the company. Now, when IBM does things, it is a very big bellwether for the rest of corporate America. It was IBM that was one of the leaders and pioneers in the offshoring trend. It was IBM that went away from the building of hardware, building computers, and moving more towards software and consulting and work and cloud computing and all that kind of stuff. IBM is definitely a pioneer. And you can bet that other companies, although some tech companies have larger marketing and communications divisions than others, but this will absolutely be one of the first targets for other corporations, be they tech or not, to cut their staffs and use AI. So now it is no longer a theoretical discussion. We are now seeing a major corporation cutting human workers and replacing them with AI. Now, when it comes to new technologies, I am always one of the people who says, don't immediately assume that there will be a net loss in jobs for humans and in wealth for humans just because there's that new technology that's coming along. But in this case, it really is going to be hard to make the argument that this will lead to more jobs in one way, lead to more companies in more way. It's going to be a very small number of people, at least in the onset, who will be making a ton of money from AI. Now, that doesn't include folks who are investing in it as stock market investors. For those of you who own shares of NVIDIA, which makes the computer chips heavily used for AI, you know what I'm talking about. You've made a lot of money in the last year or so. But as far as average workers, people who aren't active traders, things like that, the AI revolution is going to sound a lot more like this story at IBM for the next maybe few years before we get some of the positive data showing, hey, some people did get new jobs, there were new businesses created, et cetera, et cetera. This should be the number one issue in America right now because it's also coming on the heels of just this morning, the European Union Parliament passing the first definitive regulations about AI. Now, basically, I call it definitive, but it's a relative term. All this new law does is set up certain classifications for AI technology. The most dangerous one, calling it unacceptable. That will be the official label for some AI it considers to be unacceptable. And that stuff that's labeled unacceptable will be banned immediately in the EU. There were other classifications as well. So, of course, as usual, our legislative bodies, our government bodies, be they here in the United States or in Europe, are a little bit behind, if not a lot behind the eight ball on this one. But still, there is clearly some concern now. And this story at IBM, even though, again, I don't think it's going to be the number one story in America today on our news websites and in the major regime news media stations, but it should be. It should be because this is a very new story. It's not just the usual political stuff today. It is something that we all need to discuss. And if IBM is doing it, then you know so many other companies will as well. I'm Jake Novak. Thanks for listening.
We'll have to hold it there. Please remember this episode presents the personal opinions of these individuals and should not be viewed as investment advice. Thank you to Scott Stantis, Ilya Shapiro, Sarah Rumpf, Simpson Garfinkel, and Jake Novak. For their work and more in real time, please visit centerclip.com. This show has been produced in collaboration with CrossCheck Media Management. CrossCheck redefines family office services with a distinctive blend of financial expertise, media innovation, and alternative investments. One topic at a time, leaders on both sides, always under 5 minutes. That is elevating discourse. Again, centerclip.com for more throughout the week. We'll be back next week. This has been the Weekly Money Clip.
The The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.